This week, we're looking at what we really talk about when we talk about food. Because, you know, it's never just about what goes between our teeth. Someone who really understood that was the writer Jim Harrison, who died in 2016. Jim might have been most famous for writing Legends of the Fall, but for food nerds, his biggest moment was A Really Big Lunch. That's the title of an essay he wrote for The New Yorker in 2004, detailing the story of, well, a really big lunch. 37 courses, 11 hours, recipes from 17 cookbooks over hundreds of years. It's not ever really surprising to hear someone, really loves food, but as a poet and a novelist, he found deep meaning in his appetites. Mario Batali is also no stranger to the poetry of stuffing your face, and when Harrison came in for dinner at his restaurant Babbo, they became fast friends. Mario sat down with our contributor, Melissa Clark of the New York Times, to talk about Jim Harrison and what food meant for him.
Mario, hi, welcome.
Happy to be here.
Who was Jim Harrison?
Jim Harrison was a complicated fella. He was a Midwesterner. He was a Michigander. He was a somewhat successful but not entirely successful student. He studied in New York. He studied in Michigan. He traveled the world. He was a hunter. He was a fisherman. He was an impassionato of food. He was a fine writer, an excellent poet, a raconteur, a man of many stories, many hats, infinite vision, and one of the most interesting men I've ever met.
And how did you two meet?
He dropped a book off called The Road Home, which subsequently became one of my favorite books of all time, at Babbo when he dropped in for dinner the night that I wasn't there.
Of course.
And I saw it the next morning on the maitre d' stand with a little note. And I said, Jim Harrison was here. Jim Harrison was here. I interrogated everybody. I said, are you sure it was Jim Harrison, the guy that wrote this book? And then I showed him the picture, and he's pretty distinguishable. You don't confuse Jim Harrison for anybody else on the planet. So I wrote a letter to his agent at that time. I said, listen, I don't know how I blew this, but I was obviously not there the only night. It was my only night off that month. And I said, I must meet. And so I somehow got his email. And apparently he doesn't really email, but you can email his assistant and then she will send him a note by fax machine. And then he will longhand his response and fax it back to her. And then she will send it to you in an email. So it's like a 3-day email process. And we met over that. And I said, listen, the next time you come to town, we absolutely simply have to have a meal together.
And you cooked for him?
I cooked for him like 12 or 13 courses, every portion of the animal that you could not possibly find in a grocery store.
And he liked that.
Oh, that's his jam. His jam are the innards, the ears, the lobes, the kidneys. I mean, he's a man who understood the value of the life of a beast. And if you took it, you simply couldn't just eat the pork chops or the steaks. You would eat every bit of it, and in a very European way of looking at it, as opposed to looking at the tripe or the kidneys as the punishment. It was more like there's less of that, so it's the specialty. So he had a flavor for all of the things that smelled a little poopy or barny or uric, and felt really surprised and delighted when someone would cook them, because it was kind of out of fashion when Babbo opened.
Can you give us a snapshot of his food writing? How would all of that translate onto the page?
Well, he wrote a whole mess of articles for Esquire that eventually became a book called The Raw and the Cooked. And it was just his intense cerebral take on food in a way that attached the mind to the physical desire. He was slightly gluttonous, and yet not to the level of anything more graphic than complete XXX porn. Like, he was totally obsessed with food and its preparation, and he cooked a bit at home. He understood the technique, but he really understood the motivation of why cooks cook and the generosity of heart that made a cook such an interesting creature.
Food was also his enemy. He wrote a lot about his aging body and not being able to eat and drink the way he used to.
That was only a recent thing, you know. I mean, he had a slight case of late-onset diabetes, so he had to kind of lower himself down. But that was only, I'd say, in the last 10 years. And he lamented it, but that didn't mean that he cut it out completely. I mean, you know, there were times when he would have a salad, but generally 2 or 3 days later, he would have a big chunk of testo, which is the head cheese of the end. Everything north of a pig boiled off its head and then chopped and seasoned and then put back together in a mold.
So he found his balance.
Right, he found his balance.
What are some of the things you learned from him?
Well, probably the most significant thing that I could learn from Jim Harrison is when you walked through the forest or went fishing with him or went hunting with him, he was hyper aware of all of the sounds of nature to the point that he could pinpoint and capture one little kind of bird that you would maybe not even have noticed while you were walking with him, or the way that the brook babbled at a particular kind of outcrop of rocks or going over a log. The way he understood and had all of that audio filed in a way was something so remarkable, and you can hear it. I mean, you can hear when he writes, you can hear his voice in every sentence, but you can also hear his entire audio world, which is a rich, amazing tapestry.
Mario, we'd love to hear you read something from Jim's work. Will you choose something?
I would be delighted. This is a piece called Father-in-Law, presently in A Really Big Lunch. Throughout literature and lower forms of entertainment, the father of the bride is an object of just ridicule. A ditherer with a hopefully ample wallet, sweating on the sidelines while people actually competent in such matters orchestrate the wedding. I recently proved to be no exception whatsoever during the marriage of my younger daughter, Anna, in Livingston, Montana. I had no part in any of the central decisions that made the several-day party implacably smooth, except in the area of food and wine, and even in the matter of food, I deferred somewhat to my older daughter, Jamie, now a novelist. I was mostly the not-very-tiny voice yelling more and more. We had including crab and shrimp from Charles Morgan's Company in Destin, Florida, bread and cheeses from Zingerman's in Ann Arbor, Michigan, including Grafton Cheddar, Comté, Papillon Roquefort, Triple Cream L'Explorateur, Vermont Mountain Cheese Stilton, also roasted Italian olives. I almost forgot Dunn's Irish Salmon and pâtés, including splendid wild mushroom loaf. I almost forgot the oysters and the actual prime Delmonico roasts and the Norwegian poached salmon, the 200 pieces of duck comb feet made by the chef Mark Glass. There were about 100 in for dinner, and another 50 came along later. Somehow they drank 19 cases of wine, not to speak of eating all the food. Years ago, while cooking beef ribs at his house, Jack Nicholson told me that only in the Midwest is overeating still considered an act of heroism. We'll have to throw in Montana, too. Of course, drinking a lot is de rigueur at weddings, except in the dourest confines of yuppiedom. Since it was my sole delegated responsibility, I gave the wine my full, somewhat manic attention, testing 20 or so Côte du Rhône over a year's time in case lots before settling on a Sable Blanc and a Bandol for the red. I'm very good at this sort of tasting compared to my miserable college years. My pratfalls are in the arenas of novel and movie making. The Sablet is quite wonderful, though I drink very little white wine. The Bandol decision was easy as I've been drinking and serving it for years. I rather like this sturdy, suggestive red with everything, and often with nothing at all. It invariably makes me happy, recalling as it does the primal flavors of sun and earth, rather than light bulbs and supermarkets. It's also affordable if you can withstand the usual nagging of your accountant. Whenever life begins to crush me, I know I can rely on Bandol, garlic, and Mozart. It will also be served in vast quantities at my funeral. The opinion was obviously shared by those at the wedding, the legend of the hollow-legged. I salute the Domaine Tempier. This pleasure in geologic time is no more evanescent than life itself. That's Jim.
That was wonderful. Thank you, Mario.
My pleasure.
That was Mario Batali, chef owner of Italy, Del Posto, and many other restaurants. Jim Harrison's new posthumous book is A Really Big Lunch. Melissa Clark's new book is Dinner, Changing the Game. And she left us with a recipe we're pretty sure Jim would be into. Find her recipe for jalapeno honey steak at splendidtable.org.